Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
Tuesday, March 25th, 2008. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, network printing. Welcome back to another show. I have some fun stuff to talk about today. I've been working on a project in my studio that I've kind of been procrastinating on for a long time. You know how we have these sort of infrastructure things that we know we have to do? And in my case, I even had purchased the equipment, which was some networking stuff. And then it just sits there, right? It just sort of sits there and you go, I know I'm going to get to it. But at the same time, you also know that when you finally do commit to doing it, it's probably, you know, you go, well, it's only taking me a couple hours. Well, you say that to yourself, but deep down inside, you know it's going to be a whole day. And worst case scenario can be a whole weekend. And so therefore, that's why the stuff sort of sits there, because your little voice knows inside that, no, it's not going to be a couple hours, dude. No, you're going to dedicate a whole day and you'll probably do some swearing along the way. So anyway, so my project that I was procrastinating on was setting up in my workspace here, a network where I could hook all my printers into it. And then, you know, because I use a couple different computers and I carry around a laptop too, and I want to be able to just, you know, walk in and have it log into the network and be able to access all the services also. So I wanted everything to happen on this network. So I have, you know, let me just sort of review why I would want to do that. First of all, I have a lot more printers than I used to have. My bread and butter for a long time here was an Epson R2400, and that's a 13 by 19 inch inkjet printer, which I like a lot. I've reviewed it on the Digital Story. It has its pros and cons, but in the end, I still use it a lot, and I really like the output that comes out of it. And then I have just a little Canon i80 compact printer, and I use that for documents, for just pieces of paper, for model releases and invoices and stuff like that. I don't do a whole lot of that kind of printing, but when I do, I just want some, you know, nice little document printer just to crank it out for me that doesn't cost me a lot, that I can just put regular, you know, Bond inkjet paper in, and I'm done with it. Well, then over the last year, I've added a couple more printers. I've talked about the little compact HP, I think it's a 630. It looks like a little lunchbox with a handle on top of it. And what's neat about it is that you can just use it as a standalone printer for 4x6s or 5x7s, and you can just put your memory card in it from your camera. And if you're shooting JPEG or RAW plus JPEG, it'll print out the JPEGs and gives you a little screen there, and you can see everything that's going on. But you can also use it as a USB printer, where, you know, you plug a USB cable into it, hook it into your computer, and then if you're in iPhoto or Aperture or Lightroom or whatever you happen to be using, you can crank out 4x6s and 5x7s out of your software application. So I kind of, even though I use it most of the time just by putting the memory card in it and jamming out some quick prints, but every now and then I found myself wanting to use it connected to the computer. So there was number three. And then number four is the new HP 9800 printer. No, check that. I'm an idiot. It's the HP B8850, which looks like almost exactly the HP B9180. Boy, you really got to have a head for numbers in this game, don't you? But it's cheaper, and it only has a few differences from the 9180, which I like a lot, in that it doesn't have built-in Ethernet networking, which really isn't an issue for me where I am. And also, I don't think it can take quite as thick a fine art paper as the 9180. almost everything else, at least so far, I've just started testing it. I just unpacked it a little while ago and set it up. Everything else so far is almost the same as the 9180, and it's even cheaper. It's you can get it on the street, I think, for $400 and something. And it's gorgeous, 13 by 19 inches. It has both the matte and the photo and the glossy cartridge there in there, so you don't have to do any swapping. Gorgeous black and white, gorgeous color, a whole variety of stock for it. It's really gorgeous. So I'm testing that, and so then I'm adding that to the mix, and that became printer number 4. So I'm going, okay, this is ridiculous, because the way that I had these set up, is it all kind of lined up, and I put a picture on the show notes of, you know, how this setup looks. So I had them all kind of lined up against the wall there with a long USB cable, and then I'd be sitting at a table, and so then I'd take the cable and I'd, you know, put it in the printer that I wanted and move it over, plug it into the computer, and do some printing, and then make sure that when I walk to the bathroom, which is, you know, down the hallway between me, you know, there's the printers and the cable stretching across the walkway there, you know, in between me and the bathroom. So you got to make sure you're not in a hurry so that you're in the middle of a print job or something, you go running to the bathroom and then, you know, trip over the cable there, and then, you know, all heck breaks loose, and, you know, gosh knows what's going to happen then. So I was just getting really tired of doing this dance, you know, with the cable and then, you know, running hurdles every time I had to go to the bathroom and, you know, the whole thing. So I decided that, okay, I'm going to network this whole thing. So I back a couple months ago, I went out and I bought a new Airport Extreme base station. I had an airport already set up, an older one, but I went out and bought a new one. It's a rectangular one. It's a flat rectangular one. It looks sort of like Apple TV, that same sort of shape where it's square with the rounded corners, more square than rectangular, actually. And then I got a Belkin, a 4-port USB hub. And the nice thing about the Belkin hub is that it fits right beneath the Airport Extreme. And it's the same dimensions and it's the same color. So you just got this nice little stack. And I'll put a picture in the show notes, a close-up of these two guys working together. So my thinking is then, okay, I'll set up this new access point, the new Airport Extreme, and then it has a USB port in it, right? And then I'll hook the USB hub, the Belkin USB hub, into the USB port on the access point, and then I'll plug all my printers into the hub, and then if everything goes right, then no matter what computer I'm using or that I bring in or someone else brings in, then all you have to do is have, you know, be able to access the network, and then off you go. And then you can print to any printer anytime you want, and you don't have to be fooling around with it. So that was my thinking. Now, I just have to do one little caveat here before I forget. So the one thing you do have to do when you do setups like this, you have to make sure that you have the driver software for each printer loaded onto your computer. So, for instance, you know, I have to have the software for the Epson R2400 and the HP 8850 and the small HP and then the Canon i80. So you got to make sure that you have the driver software on your computer. And then once you do that, then, you know, then you can access them on the network, and the driver will talk to the printer. It, instead of talking over a cable, it just talks over the network. And off to the races you go. Or at least, you know, that's the theory behind this thinking. Now, the other part to this is sort of, you know, one of the aspects of one thing leads to another, or the domino effect, or, you know, whatever you want to call it when you embark upon these projects that go from 2 hours to 8 hours. Now, so you've got to check all the driver stuff and everything. Now, in my case, I hadn't updated the drivers in a while. And in some cases, I had newer computers that where the operating system had gone from OS 10, 10.4 Tiger to 10.5 Leopard. You know, all this sort of stuff going on. So, okay, so I had to go to all the sites and download the latest version of the print driver software, which is a really good idea. You know, and even though it's one thing leads to another, it's a good one thing leads to another, because then that way you know you have the current driver software. And I'll tell you, a lot of times when you have freaky things happen in printing, and they do happen every now and then, that old driver software can be one of the problems. The other thing I noticed that when I was on the sites, and all you got to do is go to the manufacturer site, and all of them, Canon, HP, and Epson, the three that I work with anyway, they make it really easy to find the driver software for your printer. So they, you know, that part's painless. But then the other thing I noticed is that sometimes there are new ICC profiles too. And in Epson's case, you know, they changed all the names of their paper from what I used to use or what I still have in stock. Even though a lot of times it's the same paper, they sort of changed the name. And then they updated all their ICC profiles. So while you're getting the drivers, you might as well get the new ICC profiles. Get that loaded onto all of your computers. And if you have more than one computer, then what you might want to do is put all that driver software on a little portable hard drive and then just go from computer to computer. Or you could do some sort of network install if you're savvy that way. However you want to do it. So there's a step right there. And believe me, there goes at least an hour, possibly 2 hours, depending on what your printer setup is, on getting all that stuff straightened out. Okay, so now I have all my, and I have a couple laptops. I use laptops, and then I'll plug them into, I use a Cinema display, 23-inch Cinema display, as my big viewer while I'm here in the studio. So I have all the computers are all updated. They all have current print drivers and ICC profiles. So now I have to install the new network thing. And the mistake that I made, and I did make a mistake here, it cost me some time, was that I'm lazy. I'm not going to move my current old airport base station where it is, which was not close to the printers. I'm not going to move it. What I'm going to do is just leave it where it is, and then I'm going to put the new Airport Extreme, over where the printers are, and then I'll just have it join the network, and then, you know, that'll make it easy. It'll be like a wireless relay. Well, so I did that, and I'm filling around with the settings and the airport admin setup, and I end up locking down my network, which you can do, to only the Ethernet addresses, and so you only allow access points or computers on that are, you know, in this lockdown menu. So I don't know what I was thinking. I think I was distracted. I think I was multitasking. So I set it up so that the new Airport Extreme that wasn't really configured yet was the only one that was allowed on my network. And I set up this horrible loop where I couldn't configure it because it was now locked down, and I couldn't access it because, for nothing would work. So I really did this bonehead thing, and I was totally freaked out for a few minutes. And then I remembered that you can reset these things. So this is why I tell you about my folly, because there is a way out. And so fortunately, I have another wireless card that I use when I'm on the road so I can access the network. So I go and I look up resetting Airport Extreme base station. And what you can do is you can do a hard reset. There's a little button in the back, you know, the kind that you poke with a ballpoint pen. And you can hold it in for like 5 seconds until the light, it has to be plugged in and powered up. But you can hold in that button for like 5 seconds. And then it totally resets it back to factory settings. So then it just wipes out all the screw-ups that I had done earlier, and you just start all over again. So this time I said, okay, I learned my lesson. I'm not going to do the relay thing or anything, you know, because I'm just an idiot and that's not going to work out. So then I did the hard thing, which is I set up the new Airport Extreme with the hub over where the printers are. And then I ran a wire. I found the closest outlet for my, you know, internet. And I ran the wire along the wall there to them from a different location. And, you know, of course, you have to have your little wireless modem, or, you know, whatever you're using, a little DSL. In my case, I have DSL, so I have a little DSL modem. So you run the wire to the DSL modem, and then you have an Ethernet cable that comes out of the modem and goes to the access point, the Airport Extreme, and then you can configure it. So there we go again. Here, you know, my 2 hours now have already gone to like 5 hours because, you know, of all this rigmarole and the 45 hours in total panic where I thought I had, you know, locked myself out of my own network. So then I just open up, you get an airport admin utility that comes in. You can configure your network or add a new access point. And by the way, you know, I'm saying, you know, I use the airport network. It is, in my opinion, the easiest to set up. And, you know, despite, you know, how not smart I can be sometimes, I've been running them for years, and they just work really great. And they work for both Mac and Windows systems. So if you're a Windows user and you're listening to this, I have to tell you, I like them a lot better than a lot of the other setups that I've run into. And when I go over, a lot of times people will ask me to help them with their wireless stuff or their computer stuff because they're under impression that I know a lot about computers. And so then I'll go over and they'll have like a Linksys setup or something and, you know, with a web admin tool. And you're just trying to figure this stuff out, and it's just really tough. It's not in English, and a lot of times you think you're in the right spot, and you're not, and so forth. The airport admin is very easy to figure out, and if you're thinking about setting up a wireless network, you know, I honestly recommend that you look at, you know, regardless of your Mac or Windows, I honestly recommend that you look at the airport setup. It's really nice. It's very easy to use, and then once it's up and running, it's great. And if you have to make a change later on, you just open up your computer and you go up to the airport administration utility. You just pull it up, enter your password. Don't forget your password. Enter your password, and then you can reconfigure, do whatever you want, and it's a piece of cake. It really is nice. So that's what I recommend, and hopefully whatever you choose something that won't make you crazy. So I got it all set up, and I got the hub plugged into the access point. And it's really funny. You know, I have an aside on this hub. So it's a Belkin hub. Clearly, it's made to go with this model of the Airport Extreme. Same size, same everything, and you put it underneath, and it's, you know, the same footprint. But yet, the USB connector is on the left side on the hub. And on the Airport Extreme, it's on the right side. And then they give you this, like, 1-inch long USB cable with the hub, you know, to connect the hub to the access point. And it sort of reaches, but it stretches. I end up having to put a little extender cable in there. But I'm just thinking, you go to all the trouble to get the color of the case right and the dimensions and everything. And then it's like, the engineers never plugged it in because either they got to give you a little bit longer cable, or why not just move, you know, the USB over to the same side as on the device that clearly you're designing it to go with. So anyway, if you go with the Belkin, just know it's not you. It's a weird design thing, and you might want to get just a little longer USB cable. I mean, one that's even 3 or 4 inches long will do it. You know, we'll give you enough reach because the one that comes with it will make you a little batty. So, okay. So I get the hub plugged in, and, then I start plugging in printers. And this is the part where it's just magic, right? You plug in the printers, you fire it up. And then, I just open up a print. I just opened it up in preview, you know, cause I just wanted to test stuff. And I go to print command. And I was setting this up in Leopard. So one thing that you should know about Leopard that's different than Tiger, and this is for Mac users out there, in that in Tiger and all versions of OS X before that, you had this thing called the print utility that was in the utilities folder. And it was pretty cool. You could just pull it up and you could just add a printer to your network or, you know, and off you go. So if you're new to Leopard or you haven't done this in Leopard, you go in the utilities folder and there's no print utility and you're looking in applications and okay. And you're going, well, so then you go do a print command and you can add, in the print command, there's an option to add a printer. And so you can do that. But then you go, well, I just want to go to the print utility. And if you can't find it, where it is you have to go into, now they moved it. You go into system preferences, the little icon with the gears, go into system preferences, click on print and fax, and that's where it is now. So you can set up all your printers, you can add printers and remove printers and, do all your, printer sort of work is through the system preference now, the print and fax system preference. So if you can't find it, and if you wondered where the heck they put it, that's where it is. So anyway, I went into system preferences. I turned on all the printers, went into system preferences, and then what it does is it'll look for all the printers that are on the network, which is really cool. And they come up in a little list, and then you just add them, and then it's all configured so that you can print over the network. And as long as you have the drivers set up, like I said before, now when I go to print, I just pull up the print command, and then I have a pop-up menu, and I can choose which printer I want it to go to. And for instance, I can have matte paper loaded in the Epson R2400. I can have semi-gloss loaded in the HP 8850. I can have snapshots loaded in the little HP, the 630. And then I can have, just plain paper loaded in the Canon i80 if I want to do document stuff, and just flip among them. And then if someone comes over with their computer, and if they have the drivers on there, let's say they have an Epson R2400 at home, then they come over with their laptop and a bunch of stuff, then all they have to do is open up, access the printer on the network, and then off they go, and they can print here too. So once you get it set up, it's really cool. And it involves moving furniture. I had to, go get a out of storage. I had to go get a little a side table that you'll see in the shot that allowed me to put all this stuff on it. You will have to probably move some wires around. You'll have to get some drivers, make sure that you're updated on all that, and then you have to do your testing and configuring. So it's going to end up being a day. I would say it's good rainy day stuff, but it, regardless of what the weather's like, it's going to be a day. But it's something that I think if you're getting to the point now where you have more than one computer, more than one printer, then it's something that I think just makes life a lot easier. And it's also helpful if you have more than one computer, because, again, you don't have to move the wires around. So if you have a laptop and a desktop or whatever, you can just have all this stuff on a network and then just access it whenever you want. Now, there's a second part to this, which I'm just going to mention right now, but I'm going to cover in a later podcast. And it was also the reason why I had to get off my duff and do this project, because I was running out of hard disk space for my storage. These darn RAW files are just, eating me out of house and home, storing all these things. So I invested in a Drobo. And, basically what it is a robotic backup. It's a box that allows you to put SATA drives in it. And you can buy the drives cheap. You don't need a casing for the drive or anything. You can just slide them. There's four slots in here. You just slide them in and out. And then you have automated backup and storage and all this sort of stuff. And I want to have that on the network also. And now Drobos have like a shared component. They have their own network component, but I was reading on the site, and it looks like they have USB connectivity also. So it looks like I can plug the Drobo into the last port that I have open on my USB hub, because at the moment I don't have the little HP plugged in. I can just, that's one where I can share the wire between the Canon back and forth. So I left a port open, so I have a fourth port open, and what I'm hoping to do, and probably this is the way I will waste my next Saturday, is set up the Drobo on the network too, so then I can have a backup on the network from any computer. And I want to go this route instead of the Time Capsule, which is Apple's solution that they just introduced, because it's more flexible and it's more powerful, and it will end up being cheaper. So if it works, I'm going to be in great shape. And I will be reporting on that and, you know, just backup in general and, you know, all the things that I learned in an upcoming podcast, hopefully pretty soon, because it's on its way. It's shipped. So, you know, the sooner I get it set up, the sooner I can do the show and report back to you. All right. So much for Saturday adventures. Just a little bit of virtual camera club business. The latest photo assignment, which was the one for February, is now online. And if you haven't taken a look at it, you should take a look at it. It's empty. And as always, there's just some terrific shots on there. I got a really nice mail from one of our TDS members. His name is Jim Stocking. And he said in his mail that you know, he participates in the photo assignment almost every month, and that he was really impressed by some of the work of you in the photo assignment, and that it by participating, it's really encouraged him to step up his game, as he said. And so, if you look at his shot that he has in there this month for empty, you will notice that, at least in my opinion, he has definitely stepped up his game, and in all the shots that he submitted were definitely very nice, very well done, and very engaging. And I just thought that was cool that he observed that, and that he sort of took up the challenge to have his stuff look good in the photo gallery with everyone else's. And, you know, and as a result, I think, you know, he is improving as a photographer and, you know, has become a very good one. So that's just something to mention about the photo assignment. You know, part of the reason why we do this is obviously to share each other's work. You know, that's part of our camera club. But it's a great opportunity to see how other people interpret these assignments and then, you know, execute them, and then how your work compares to what they're doing. And I do think it helps make us better photographers and opens up our vision a little bit. And it's a good opportunity to embrace that. So if you haven't participated, this month's assignment, there's still time, is paper. And then we'll have another one and another one and another one. So if you don't have time to pull your assignment together for this month, well, by the way, the entries for paper are due by the end of March. Then you know, say, make the commitment to yourself that you're going to participate in April or in May, and do it. And this is a chance to really, you know, all of us can be better. We can always be better photographers, and no matter how good we are, we can even be better. And this is one way, you know, to help you with that quest. I'm ready for some more grab shots, by the way. And so if you're sitting on one, make sure you send it in. I also want to mention that Digital Photography Companion, the official manual for the Digital Story Virtual Camera Club, is out in the wild now. And if you haven't got your copy yet, you can order it. You can just go on site on the Digital Story. And there's a link at the top for Digital Photography Companion. Click on it, and there's a big order now button. It'll take you right to that page in Amazon where you can get a great price on it. And it's also going to be showing up in Barnes & Noble booksellers and Borders booksellers and independent booksellers here over the course of April, probably. Start seeing it in early April. So make sure you pick up a copy. I really appreciate it, and I think you'll be really glad that you did. It's a terrific book, and I'll be referring to it definitely over the coming months. And I think that's it. Oh, I want to mention I had a great meeting with LowPro just real quick. And the notion of doing Bag of the Month is getting closer and closer all the time. LowPro is a sponsor. You can click on their tile, but keep your fingers crossed that we're going to be doing Bag of the Month soon, and that will be with a discount. And then, of course, Expo Disc by Expo Imaging. I just used it a few minutes ago for a custom white balance. And Photomagico by Boink Software, the best way to make slideshows on a Mac. I thank all of our sponsors, and they're all listed on the site. I thank you for listening, and I'll have more things to report next week. I'm going to be in Orlando next week for Photoshop World. So I'll be spend a lot of time in the Raleigh booth. If you're there, look me up, and I'll have come back next week, and we'll find out what's going on. Okay, bye bye now.
your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.